Hey, if you struggle with depression or doubt, you're in better company than you think. Let's talk about it with Diana Gruber on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
We are so glad you're with us. You always have a place at our table. The name of the program is Steve Brown, etc., and I'm Steve. New year, same old white guy. My favorite megachurch pastor, Zach Van Dyke, isn't here after a New Year's of debauchery and partying and the COVID, which followed. He is home, sick, in bed. No, he's really not. That was a joke. Matthew Borders with us. He writes the jokes for New Year's Day. Matthew's wife cooked up ham, turnip greens, black-eyed peas, and cornbread for good luck. Matthew, good luck on working off those calories, too.
Got that right.
You know, I grew up in the South, and my mother always made that stuff. She said I would be rich, and it didn't happen. Would have plenty of change, and it didn't happen. And that I would be lucky, and it didn't happen. My mother lied to me, and that was the beginning of my clinical depression. I just want you to know that. Speaking of New Year, our producer Jinx is in the little glass booth making sure we don't drop the ball. And our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John's New Year's resolution is 19-20 by 10-80. John, is that some kind of techie joke or something?
Yes.
Matthew does this to confuse the old guy, and I don't appreciate it, frankly.
I'm sorry.
Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. Last year, George did a home renovation. And this year, he's going to try something less ambitious, like learning Mandarin or something.
Yeah,
that's true.
I could survive that more easily.
And Kathy Wyatt, of course, is the soft feminine side of the program. We all think of Kathy's baking quite often, usually while standing on the bathroom scales. Are you making anything for us today, Catherine?
No, not a thing. I don't appreciate the writing humor. So until that improves, there's no sweets.
Well,
for
you
anybody.
Know, I didn't write it. Matthew wrote it.
Well, you just got
make me cookies and leave him out. Okay.
You just got a pie for your birthday. What else do you want? Gee,
Steve, you all want my Oreos?
We have a great guest today, Diana Gruber. She holds a master's degree from Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, my old stomping grounds. She writes about discipleship and spiritual transformation in the everyday. And Diana previously served as a writer and editor for Culture and Youth Studies, and her newest book is called Companions in the Darkness, Seven Saints Who Struggled with Depression and Doubt. Diana, it is so good to have you with us.
Oh, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I love this book, but frankly, I'm kind of upset with you. We do need heroes, and you just took some of mine, rolled them in the dirt, and I can't keep them on the pedestal after writing your book, reading your book.
Occupational hazard, I guess.
This, you guys, and you've heard me say before that if you have books on famous Christians and why they're famous, you should burn them. They're not helpful. They make you feel guilty, and they reflect a side of humanity that doesn't exist. But if you want a place of identification with what it means to be human, the dark side of what it means to be human that we all experience in one degree or another, then you got to get this book. This would be a great discussion book. It will clear out some of the nonsense that's in the church. And the name of the book, again, is Companions in the Darkness, Seven Saints Who Struggled with Depression and Doubts. Diana, you've never been there, so you're not writing as somebody who's involved, but as someone on the outside who is examining these things. Is that right?
I mean, I wasn't there with each of these people.
I was. They're not that old.
But I have walked through depression myself. And so I think I bring a personal motive to this book and the research as well, because there's stories that I need and it's wisdom that I need too. And I think that was part of what set me out on the trajectory that led to writing this book.
You know, as I read about your experience with clinical depression, I found it quite moving. You made me experience some of what you experienced, some of the guilt, the debilitation, the blackness, and the darkness. I go through that. It's just not clinical. It will probably happen three or four times during this hour. But man, I tell you, I read about it and it makes me wince. Tell us a little bit about your experience and then we'll get to some of these people.
So the deepest season of depression that I've walked through to this point was when I was in college. I think it started before I had a name for it, but I didn't know to call it depression. And it wasn't until my senior year that it became debilitating enough that I had to really face it and call it what it was. I think anyone who's walked through depression will tell you that it's not just extreme sadness. It's more to it than that. It's more inclusive than that. It affects your motivation. It affects your perception of yourself, your perception of others. And so not only was I sad, but eventually was just numb. Like life didn't really have the pleasure that it once did. And it was hard to concentrate. And I know there have been others who have had it much worse than I have and much longer seasons than I have, but it's a hard road to walk and it's a process to recover from. But as you mentioned, as a Christian, I think there comes senses of guilt that come with depression as if, you know, maybe if I had more faith, it would go away. And I've learned since then that that's not true. But in the moment, that was definitely something I had to wrestle through, in addition to all of the other symptoms that depression brought along with it.
And now you're fixed. You don't have to go there anymore, right?
Well, I've not plunged to the same depths as I did then, but it's still a part of my story. And it's still something I know I need to be aware of. I know I have that proclivity and sometimes I can feel its tug and I need to know to take care of myself and I need to know when I need to ask for help if that day comes again.
Was it your own pain that was the genesis of this book or the discovery that these famous people had feet of clay just as you do and we all do? What started you thinking along this line? Your own depression or was there more?
It wasn't my own because I didn't know these stories then. I had no idea that these stories existed. I had never heard them. And I think that's the case for most people. They don't know this part of these people's lives. So I was in seminary and the program I was in there was heavily rooted in church history. And so I started noticing some of these stories popping up and I think maybe I noticed them more because of my own history. I think you can recognize things in other people that you've walked through yourself. And it just sparked my curiosity. You know, why had I never heard these stories? And what might I have to learn from them? And might have knowing them have pushed back against some of that guilt that I experienced when I had walked through depression myself.
Yeah.
So that kind of sent me out on this process of researching and processing and writing, and then eventually that bloomed into this book.
You're going to have people all over the world who are going to rise up and call you blessed. There is a disease in the church of wearing masks and pretending stuff that doesn't exist. And as a result, we have Christians everywhere who are dying. I answered a letter this morning from a lady who is struggling with obsessive compulsive stuff. And she thought God was angry at her, and she thought she had sinned and she was being judged. By the way, just so you know, you touched her, because when I wrote her back, I told her about your book and the fact you were going to be our guest today. And I said something really comforting to her. You need to watch or listen to the program. And if you don't, you'll get the fever and die.
Knew it was coming.
And I hope that she is watching or listening right now, because this will be very helpful to her. Hey, guys, I have a mug in my office at Key Life, and it reads, Prozac until Jesus returns. Jesus has been gentle with us, and one of the reasons is the medication. We'll talk about it. Don't you go anywhere.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, Etc. We're talking with author Diana Groover about her new book, and it's a great book. You must get this book and share it with everybody you know. About half my friends are depressed, and the other half have caused the depression, and they all need to read this book. And it'd be a great study for a small group at church. The name of it is Companions in the Darkness, 7 Saints Who Struggled with Depression and Doubt.
Diana, I think I need you to give me a little bit more of a perhaps a working definition on depression and also on sadness. I have discovered people in my life who were depressed, and by their own acknowledgement of that fact, and I would never have known that, because I think in my mind I look around at people who are, again, I hate to use the word sadness because I realize that the two are different, but you know, you look at some people and they seem to just be kind of like Eeyore with a black cloud, with a cloud that hangs over them, and they take it with them wherever they go. And so you tend to label that as depression. And then you find out somebody that you had absolutely no idea, and then they find out that they are in fact depressed. So I'm a little confused. Are you sad, and then you get to a point where your sadness is so bad that you then become depressed, or does that make any sense at all?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's hard is you've heard a lot of people say, oh, I'm so depressed. They are. Yeah. They're sad or they're discouraged and they're not the same thing. And so I think because of the way that we use that term in a non-clinical sense, it can become a little confusing of, you know, what's the definition of, what's our working definition of these terms? And I think you're right. I think there are some people who have depression and are highly functional. Not everybody, but some people are, and you wouldn't know. I think that's part of the beauty of the stories in this book is it shows some of the different faces that depression brings. Some people are laid flat on their back. They can't get out of bed. You know, they're considering harming themselves. And then there are other people who have this deep emptiness and ache, but they can somehow continue to keep getting up every day and doing their things. And so it depends. Different people bring their own experiences to the table in that regard. But from a clinical standpoint, it's there's usually some kind of sadness and a loss of pleasure in things that you once enjoyed. So maybe your work or your hobbies, those things that used to bring delight to you just don't bring delight anymore. But in addition to that, for some people, the physical symptoms are more prominent. So they might be sleeping more or less. They might be eating more or less. Some people have a lot of anger that comes with their depression, which is a symptom that I think surprises people sometimes. Feelings of guiltiness or worthlessness, just this lack of motivation and this general kind of malaise, apathy towards life. And so it's multifaceted in that sense and kind of it touches every part of your life. And so people who are diagnosing depression look for a cluster. I think it's at least 7 of those symptoms for 2 weeks or longer. And that is when you cross the line to be clinically depressed. Does that help at all?
Yeah, very much. Very much. Yeah.
Diana, I was looking at the list of names in your book. And if you didn't know the context, you would go, oh, these are just a list of like all-star super Christians. And they are. But the other thing they have in common is, you know, the wrestling with the depression and the doubt. Martin Luther, Hannah Allen, David Brainerd, William Cowper. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. Charles Spurgeon, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr. Among this kind of pantheon of people, was there any name or two? Is there anybody who you... when you came across it, you're like, oh, I had no idea. That's very surprising.
All of them? I didn't know. I mean, William Cooper, I think is one that people talk about a lot as far as depression. The same with David Brainerd. Those two are very evident. Charles Spurgeon, a lot of times gets overlooked. I think the one that was the most surprising to me was Martin Luther King Jr., just because he didn't speak about it publicly. And so it's not something that's as prominent as some of the other parts of his life or his character. It doesn't mean it's not there. I think there's ample evidence, obviously, but that one was a little more surprising to me because I'd never heard about that part of his story before.
And what was...
No, go ahead, Matthew.
I was going to say, what was the meaning to, I feel like it would be very meaningful once you start uncovering these things of like, you always want to know you're not alone, but you come up against this knowledge with these people. You're like, oh no, I'm really not alone. And this does not qualify me from being a Christian.
And like you said, it's an all-star cast, right? So these aren't just, it's not just me telling you my story. It's someone that we look up to and we celebrate and we're still talking about their life and their legacy years, decades, centuries after their death. And so I think it does, you're right. It brings us a lot of hope and comfort when we're struggling, not just to have permission that, I can struggle like this. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with me, but even just the reassurance that God can still use me. Depression is not going to be the final sentence in my story.
Yeah.
It wasn't in Spurgeon's or Luther's or King's. He can still use me. And that, I think, is a source of hope and comfort that we really need when we're struggling.
Diana, you indicate, you know, depression's almost one of the more insidious kinds of struggles that people have because it has, as you point out, both a physiological as well as a sort of a psychological element in many cases. I think it's really helpful in terms of getting some of that description and some of the details, which can help people kind of know that perhaps they should be looking at, you know, getting some help. But I really appreciated you being very careful to encourage people to, you know, not try and self-diagnose, not try and self-medicate, not try and self-therapy, whatever the right term would be for that. But talk a little bit about, you know, what would be appropriate for somebody who begins to discover some of these elements, and maybe we'll have to do that on the other side of the break. But what are some of the things that people should be looking at, and what would be the steps in terms of getting that addressed?
Diana, I'll tell you what, we're running out of time in this segment, so we will use this as a teaser. When we return, we'll find out an answer to George's question. I want to find out something about the link of sin and acedia to this sort of thing. I was lecturing on a seminary campus once and suggested that Spurgeon was so depressed he couldn't get into the pulpit. And a kid sitting on the front row crossed his arms and was angry the rest of the lecture. And I said to him afterwards, "Son, did I offend you?" And he said, "No, just lied." We'll lie some more on the other side of the break.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Steve Brown, Etc. And if you like this show, you might enjoy our email list. You can sign up for free. Then once a week, we'll send you an article or video just to remind you that God's not mad at you. And if you're a believer, and you'll be so glad to get it. And if you don't, you can't complain because it's free. Just go to keylife.org/subscribe.
Diana, before the break, I was asking about, your description of depression can be very helpful, and also especially the kind of the models that you show with saints of the church that experienced some things that might be depression. But so while there's some helpful opportunities for people to identify maybe some elements in their life that they should be concerned about, you're very careful not to suggest that people self-diagnose or self-medicate or, you know, self-treat themselves. Can you talk a little more about that? If someone is kind of discovering some of those things for the first time, or maybe from times before?
Yeah, I mean, a great step is to go to your primary care doctor and talk with them. Another thing would be to find a therapist. I don't think you need to be at your wit's end to be in therapy. And so even if you're not clinically depressed, if you're really struggling, seeing a therapist can be a great step, and they might be able to help you discern if you are depressed and where to go from there.
That's awesome. Diana, we kind of glanced over kind of the broad view of all the people in the book that you talk about. But one that really jumps out for a lot of folks, for me, is Mother Teresa. Doesn't she have it all together? What I think this is something that maybe not a lot of people are aware of. Was it depression for her? Was it doubt? Was it both? What's the story there?
She is definitely the hardest person in the book to say, yeah, I think she was depressed, just because we don't have enough information. Mm. During her lifetime, only some of her closest spiritual advisors knew about her areas of struggle in her spiritual life. And the world didn't know about them until she was in the process of being canonized as a saint. And a book, Come Be My Light, was published with some of her private letters and journals. And that revealed to the world her struggle. She had enjoyed this very intimate relationship with God. And then around the time that she left to begin her ministry in Calcutta, which made her famous, it was like the lights went out. And she lost a sense of God's presence. She felt like she couldn't pray. She eventually said that her soul was like an ice block, and the place of God in her soul was blank, was what she said. And she just talked about this darkness. And was it depression? I don't know. We don't have enough information. But in my own experience, and that of everyone else that I've talked to who has struggled with depression, that sense of internal desolation and God's absence and God's silence is something that depression brings with it. And so that's why I wanted to include her story, because I think she has some great wisdom to offer about how to navigate that.
Right. Did she ever kind of come around on the other side of that, or was it just something that was constantly with her as just living with that reality?
Yeah, that was the rest of her life. It sounds like she had about a month's worth of respite at some point, but that was, 40, 50 years of walking like that. I think it's really a walking by faith and not by sight.
How about that?
I don't know if I have that kind of faith. I think I'd say, I'm out of here. I'm going to become a Buddhist or something and kind of go. Talk about, if you will, and you can use people that we're talking about to illustrate it, but were there those who knew about the downside of these people and had an attitude of how could you, you're a leader, you're a Christian, and this kind of thing doesn't happen to Christians?
During their lifetime, no. I think one thing that shocked me in my research is it feels like people from times past had a much more matter-of-fact approach to depression or melancholy, as they would have called it, than we do today. But posthumously, definitely. I'll never forget a biography of Charles Spurgeon that I read. And the biographer said explicitly, he's done all of these wonderful things. Yes, he was depressed, but this is just his feet of clay. You need to excuse him of it and just look at all the wonderful things that he did. David Brainerd, his diary, Jonathan Edwards was a similar way, yes, he was depressed, but look at these wonderful things that he did. And, I think that gives us a faulty view of their life and even what the seasons of struggle might have to offer us.
And sorry, just tagging onto that, I know we're out of time, but you had a very gracious way of speaking about Martin Luther in that kind of backwards look. Maybe that's something we could kind of touch on in the next segment, but I've never heard anybody frame it quite that way. And and you were really good to call out what needs to be said about Martin Luther, but it had just a gentle touch on it. I thought that was really wonderful.
Oh, that'll be good. And Kathy, you can listen carefully since you have recently become a Lutheran and betrayed right. your Presbyterian roots.
Here we go.
By doing so. Guys, this is a great book, Diana Groover. It's called Companions in the Darkness, Seven Saints Who Struggled with Depression and Doubts. If you're human, this book could change your life. Trust me on this. Well, this is hard work. We're going to have some cookies and milk and take a nap. And then, like Jesus, we're coming back. he was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, you know, she seemed like a very nice lady. I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc., and we're so glad you're with us. Diana Groover is a delight, and this book will rock your world and make a difference, a life-changing difference. You can keep up with her, Diana Groover. That's DianaGroover.com and on Twitter at Diana Groover.
And before the break, we talked about, touched on one of the subjects of your book, Martin Luther. In modern terms, you know, if you cite him as an example we can learn from, there is an obligatory now need to have a disclaimer that speaks to, you know, the latter part of his life and things that he had said. But you took a step beyond that and had a really interesting and I thought very perceptive insight. Can you just drill into that a little bit?
Yeah. So he had a sharp tongue, Martin Luther, and it now gets him into trouble with some of the things that he said about Jews in particular. He also did not have a lot of great things to say about women at times. And so, he does need a disclaimer.
He didn't like the Pope either.
He also did not like the Pope. No, he did not. And he had a lot of very creative insults, many of them scatological. But anyway, I couldn't help but wonder. It doesn't excuse the things that he said, but I think it can make it a little more understandable when you know that he had this internal turmoil. He had a lot of physical illnesses. And so he may have already had that part of his personality, but it's really easy to imagine that his mental and physical struggles just added fuel to that fire. Like I said, it doesn't excuse it, but I think it becomes a lot more understandable what might have generated it.
You know, I believe that if you examine any Christian, you're going to find secrets, stuff that's dark. And we forget that sometimes in our effort to be self-righteous. And so grace takes a back seat. And the whole essence of the Christian, I'm glad that Martin Luther did some bad things. He's my hero, not because he was good, but because he wasn't, and he knew he wasn't, and understood what grace is all about. So of all the people you write about, the gospel comes, well, maybe Spurgeon too, but through Martin Luther, you really get that. You mentioned some people who even fake depression. Really? Do you know people that do that to get sympathy or to get points or what?
I don't now, but that was definitely something that's happened throughout history. There's always this cyclical pattern of what is depression? Is it a personal failing? Is it like a physical illness, or is it a sign of genius? And so there were some segments of history where, the humors that fueled genius and creativity also fueled depression or melancholy. It was the melancholy humor. And so there have been segments in throughout our history where it was stylish to act as if you were depressed and melancholy, because maybe it meant that your mind was inclined towards greatness.
Is there any truth to melancholy or depression being the soil out of which genius grows?
I don't know. That might be above my pay grade. But I will say that that struggle is real. It is painful. But I think there can be treasures that you get out of that. It doesn't mean that it does it fuel your genius? Maybe not. But are there still ways that you can grow and learn and can it provide wisdom? Yeah, I think so. I think that's the way that God chooses to work a lot of times.
In fact, your book is an example of that. I mean, this book would have never been written if you had tiptoed through the tulips with Jesus all your life. And so there's a sense in which your wound is where your power is, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the difference between clinical depression and acedia?
So acedia is, for those who might not be familiar, it's one of the seven deadly sins, which we now call sloth. And I think that you can't draw a straight one-to-one correlation between depression and acedia, but I think they're related. And part of why I think that is, so you have this acedia, this kind of apathy, you know, lack of motivation. You can't get yourself up and doing things. But there was also an eighth sin or vice called tristitia, which brought with it this sense of sadness. And at some point in church history, they were combined into one. And so you have this sense of sadness and you have this sense of apathy or the lack of ability to do things and engage. And that sounds an awful lot like depression to me. And so was it always depression? No. But could there have been times when it was? I think so. And I think part of why there wasn't in that time period, there wasn't a direct correlation is because in the time frame that was happening, melancholy, one of the symptoms that came with it was usually like hallucinations or delusions or hearing voices. And so if you didn't have that kind of more psychotic involvement in your melancholy or depression, then that wasn't a part of the diagnosis at the time. So I think that was part of why maybe that connection wasn't made at that time period.
Yeah, and you talked about kind of sometimes the shame that's felt around, you know, exploring this or maybe acknowledging it. And I love the quote, I can't remember the source, but the problem we can't talk about is now two problems. So if somebody's listening to this and they're experiencing depression, that's like one group. Another group is the people who know those people. So what would you say to them? And in particular, how can we be more empathetic and helpful to people who are going through this?
I think the first step is learning that your job is not to fix other people. That's usually how we lead, right? We come with our cure-all when what we need to lead with is just the ministry of our presence. And so I think starting with a willingness to listen and not jump ahead to solutions, but to understand what someone's experienced, to be willing to hear their story is a great starting point. I think second, getting them from that point, getting them connected to the people that can help them. So whether that be a medical professional, a mental health professional is a great step. The third thing I think of is to keep showing up. It's hard to walk with someone through depression, just as it's hard to be the person who is depressed. And so just being patient with them and continuing to stay present with them until the light comes back.
Be like Eeyore's friends.
Yep.
Diana, we're running out of time and I don't know where it went. Thank you for writing this book and thank you for taking some time to be with us. I hope we can do this again.
I do too. This was a lot of fun.
Good. Her name is Diana Groover, and you ought to write this down. Companions in the Darkness, Seven Saints Who Struggle with Depression and Doubts. It'll clean your soul out. And Diana, we rise up and call you blessed. Thanks again for being with us.
Thanks. It's good to be with you.
And for the rest of you, don't touch that dial. We're going to come back and we're going to tell you who will be our guest next week. And you're going to be amazed and surprised. It won't be as good as this program, but not half bad. So sit still and, like Jesus, we'll return.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, it's been fun having you with us this past hour, and lots of fun having Diana with her. I'm glad that she wrote this book. We need this book, and we need it desperately in the church. We've all been going around pretending that everything's fine when it's not fine, that we're good and we're not good, that we do it right and we don't do it right. And in fact, the source of our power is the realization of that, the jars of clay, so that God gets the credit for what he does. And something like this book reminds us that we're all very human. Aslan said to one of the children in the Chronicles of Narnia who wanted him to do something, "We have to be kind to one another because life is really hard." And it really is. And the difference is Jesus. And Diana makes that clear. She doesn't hide the dark. She talks about her walking through it and how hard it was, and tells us about our heroes who've been there and done that. I have a lot of their pictures on my wall in my study at Key Life. Sometimes late at night, they speak to me and they say, "We were screwed up too. And God used us. Maybe he can even use you." Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
We have absolutely no idea.
Oh, great.
Maybe we'll interview Matthew or Jinx. Ooh.
We could talk about politics.
I'm an open book. Go for it.
Talk about politics. That's always fun these days.
Yeah.
That's right. Lose half our audience.
We have a lot of irons in the fire, but they're just, some of them aren't hot enough yet. So.
So listen, it'll be fun.
It'll be fun.
Get with your friends in your small group and lay odds on whether we'll have a guest or not.
No, don't do that.
You could make some money on the side, and George would be pleased if you would send a tithe of that tainted money. Just ain't enough. If you would send some of that tainted money to Key Life so that we might continue this ministry of encouraging people to be holy and stuff. Yeah.
Are you trying to use up time here? Is that what's happening?
I'm watching the clock and waiting for that music to start, and it has. So what you do if you're a preacher, you keep talking until something
comes
to
mind. You just keep talking, yeah.
Well, you did that well.
And that means that it's time to go. Hope you'll join us next week. Same time, same place. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that gives you a wide, wide berth.